Hello, guys and gals. Bob Sherwood here on Wednesday. I have a story to tell. I'm going to tell as fast as I can, but it may be too slow for a lot of you who will want to just speed the podcast up. My wife, Helen, before I met her, this is maybe over 50 years ago, she lived on the Plaza. And for those of you who are not familiar with Kansas City, the Plaza is down in, let's say, Kansas City, Missouri. She lived on the Plaza with some of her friends, and one of her friends was a girl about the same age as my wife. This girl's name was Denise. Her last name was Callahan. Denise Callahan was the youngest daughter of my oldest sister. Denise Callahan and Helen Metz at that time lived together on the Plaza. Now, jumping around a bit, so after I got divorced, I was in an apartment, and Denise had come out to live with me. I had met Denise very often in my life because she was a lot younger than I was. But I called my sister and I said, I've got some kids and need some help. And Denise came out. So she lived with me. She helped buy my first furniture for my condominium. She was a big help to me. Now, one day, there was a knock at the door, and some friends of Denise had come out to visit Denise. That was Helen. That's how I met Helen. The short story there is 2 years later, Helen and I moved in together, and later we got married. So the story is not about Helen, more about Denise. So Denise dated a lot of guys, but eventually she dated a guy named John. And John's last name was Yoshihara. John Yoshihara. There's a lot of side stories there. You know, John's a big baseball fan. They named their first son after Brett, and that Brett, George Brett, and they brought him back to Kansas City. And I think they actually met George Brett. He may have even autographed a ball for their son. Okay, so Denise is married to John Yoshihara in this story. John is Japanese. I think he was born in the United States, but his parents were born in Japan. Now, so one day, this is now about probably 44 years ago or 40 years ago, I'm at John Yoshihara's house, and I walked back into a room, and there was a plaque on the wall. Now, I believe that his dad had just passed away. So I saw the plaque on the wall. It was a picture of his dad in a U.S. Army military uniform. And I said, John, what is that? And John said, well, my dad, during the war, because he was Japanese, spoke Japanese, joined a full Japanese military squadron, which did translations for the American military. So he became a decorated, I don't know if he was a military hero or not, but he was a decorated military person. And that's World War II. So during World War II, John Yoshihara's dad went into the American military. Now, a lot of Japanese after or during World War II were put in internment camps. There were internment camps in Kansas, they were in California, they were all over. Some people call them like prison camps, but they were basically camps. They had fences around them. The Japanese people were moved there. All their families moved there, their kids. They were taken care of, as far as I know, in these camps, but they lost all their possessions. Now, later, actually, there were some lawsuits, and they actually won a lawsuit that paid, I think, like several billion dollars of reparations to the Japanese who had been placed in these internment camps. Okay, so some Japanese are in internment camps, and some Japanese are in the military, as translators. So I'm talking to John and his mother was still alive. And I asked them what was it like after they came back after the war. Now remember, John's dad was in the military. So, as it's explained to me, they came back to California after the war, let's just say 1947, 1948, 49, that period of time, and tried to buy a house. Now, nowhere, according to what I'm told, any residential community would they sell a house to a Japanese person. And it makes sense because, after all, we had big posters put up about how bad the Japs were and how they killed people, you know, just like we did. And so there was a real PR push to support a war against Japan. Not that we needed one, after all, they bombed Pearl Harbor. But the point is, there was a lot of ill feeling, negative feelings created by these PR campaigns about Japanese. In fact, it was almost like a horrible thing to say, oh, he's a Jap. That was like a big negative. Okay, so John Yoshihara's dad comes back after the war and tries to buy a house in the San Jose area and could not find a house anywhere else but in some old farmyards. San Jose at that time wasn't called Silicon Valley. It was actually, I think, orange trees and apple trees and fruits and things of that nature. So, as this story goes, John's dad couldn't buy a house in a residential community, so he had to buy a farm, farmland. Of course, you already know the rest of the story, don't you? That farmland, of course, eventually became Silicon Valley, and John's dad and his family became, you know, reasonably wealthy people because the land increased significantly in value. So, did they have the last laugh? I don't know. The whole idea, though, that there was such a strong level of discrimination that they couldn't buy a house in a normal residential community, but they had to buy a farm. And of course, I left out another important part. Of course, he couldn't get a job. He was in the military, a decorated veteran, but he couldn't get a job. So he got a farm. They raised fruits and vegetables, and he became a fruits and vegetable salesperson. They sold what they grew. Became very successful at it. Eventually operated one of the best breakfast or dinner and restaurants in San Jose, California, that I've ever been to. I've forgotten the name of it now, but I used to go to it. It was always packed. Now, he was passed away at those in that time, and his sons, John, worked there a bit, and his other son, Dale, worked there a bit, and there was some, I think he had a daughter too. But the point is, he became very successful. Couldn't get a house in a residential community, bought a farm, couldn't get a job, raised fruits and vegetables, became a fruits and vegetable salesperson. Internment camps is what they were called. You hear about them every once in a while. You can research them. You can probably Google it as I'm talking. I know there was a big one in Kansas. I don't know exactly where it is, but I know you can actually go and take tours of the area. So there must still be some buildings around in that area. But those were internment camps. Now, as far as I know, we didn't kill anybody there, but we kept them there. And of course, believe it, these people lost all their possessions. They were taken out of their homes because they were Japanese. They hadn't done anything wrong and put in these internment camps until the war was over. It would be a great kind of research project for somebody to look at how the people were brought back into society. Of course, some weren't. They couldn't get jobs. And as John's dad, John Yoshihara's dad, ended up buying old farmland, which turned out to be Silicon Valley. And the land became very valuable. So his family became very wealthy in terms of real estate. And I remember that story because it's such a horrible story, except for the ending. I can't imagine how hard it must have been for John Yoshihara's dad to come back and people would not sell, did not want him in their community because he was Japanese. I'm sure people said, oh, we don't want that Jap living around here. Horrible, horrible. That's a story. Now that family, my wife's friend Denise, they had several children. Their children now have other children, and they have now grandchildren, and they still live in San Jose, California. And they've done very well in the real estate area. So that's the story of my niece, whose name is Denise, who lived with my wife Helen on the plaza for a couple of years. And what's is part of the plan, not plan, but timeline by which I eventually met Helen. So that's a story for you. I'm told people like to hear personal stories. That one has a little bit of history involved in it because it talks about, I talked about Japanese internment camps, discrimination. And of course, now we have years later, Japan has rebuilt itself into an electronic powerhouse. Circuit boards, electronics, computers, televisions. If it's electronic, more than likely, it may have been made in Japan. Very interesting story for me when you think about we leveled Hiroshima with an atomic bomb. We leveled Nagasaki with another atomic bomb. And today, if you go there, other than monuments around the epicenter where these bombs actually exploded, you would see a thriving community. More than likely, there's many of the younger people there don't even remember those days, because after all, that was 55 plus 24, 25, 80 years ago. So that's a story. And I think for me, here's what I learned from that story. There's no such thing as a good war. I think Ukraine may have to give up part of their country to Russia. If that's what it takes to stop the killing, then I think that's what they have to do. If Trump can broker that somehow, where we agree not to put military troops in the Ukraine, we agree to never let the Ukraine in NATO, I think Putin will be satisfied. Of course, he'll want part of the territory that they've taken over, and I think the Ukrainians have got to give that up. Now, to me, the key there would be if you're a Ukrainian person in the area they're going to be giving up to Russia, you could move out. Maybe we relocate those people. Or people now that still have an allegiance to Russia, they move into that area. But I'm sure there's people there that still have an allegiance to Russia. I am hoping that that kind of peace deal can be brokered by Trump, because I think Trump understands that there's no such thing as a good war. And people are getting killed right and left. And frankly, we're as guilty of it as anybody because we're supplying them the weapons. And I am in favor of stopping supplying them weapons immediately. Does that put more Ukrainians at risk? Maybe. But I think it also sends a message to Russia that we're not going to wage proxy wars anymore. I think under Biden, we waged a proxy war in Ukraine and didn't call it a proxy war. For some reason, because we only supplied them weapons. In other words, hey, I didn't shoot the gun. I gave them the bullets. Yeah, I gave them the gun too. But when they shot Joe, it wasn't my fault. Well, did you give them the guns and the bullets? Well, yes, I did, but I didn't tell them to shoot anybody. So you know what I'm driving at, right? That's how the story goes. And that's the, I'll call that the personal story about things that I think about when I think about discrimination, how one country seems to overcome it. What I mean is that I'm not saying we overcame, but I'm saying they overcame being Japanese, not being able to buy a house, or now having, now their main executive is semiconductor businesses, right? Look around to see who runs computer companies and semiconductor business, and you're going to find, well, among other things, you'll find Japanese people there. So there we go. That is the Japanese story. Now I'm going to pause for a second. So there may be a glitch, and then I'm going to come back. Okay, took a little pause there, but I'm back. Couple of things that are on my mind. Of course, everybody now is familiar with SpaceX and what they've done. But there are some things you may not be aware of. March 14th, which is the day the launch took place to, I guess, return the people back to Earth, was the 23rd anniversary of SpaceX founding. They were founded 23 years ago, right? That's incredible. Now, nothing much happened, or you may be aware that for a long time, SpaceX, what SpaceX was busy doing was launching satellites that eventually became the Starlink. But sometime in the late, I don't know, 2016, 2017, NASA went out for bids and gave contracts to two companies. One was SpaceX and one was Boeing to build rockets to send people into orbit. Boeing has not been successful doing that. But I want to read something that I read about SpaceX. SpaceX pioneered reusable rockets, dramatically lowering the cost of reaching space. It now handles roughly, now listen to this, it now handles roughly half of the world's orbitable launches and more than 80% of launches, excluding Chinese and Russian rocket launches. They are an important ingredient in anything America does. I guess what's also saying is that 100% of the launches that the USA or NASA does, SpaceX does. They do 80%. If you discount Chinese and Russian rockets, all the rest of the launches, well, 80% of them are done by SpaceX. It's just incredible to me that this company comes out of nowhere and can do that. Now, my last point for today, I don't want to overwhelm you with brilliant observations, is what I've said before. Rachel Maddow is dangerous because she's very effective in drawing a line or a series of lines with a single dot. Now, our current theme is that Putin and Trump are friends, best friends, and they're working together to divide up the world. And she makes no, she doesn't hide the fact. She actually says that. Trump's going to get Greenland and Canada and Mexico, and Putin's going to get something else. But they're good friends. They're good friends. That's what she says. Well, let's see. First place, I'd rather have Trump be friends with Putin than be an enemy, because it wouldn't be wise that the leaders of two of the most powerful nations in the world, Russia and the United States, hate each other. I'd rather have them respect each other. Now, respect to me means recognize that Putin is president of one of the largest countries in the world and a powerful country with nuclear capability, military capability, economic capability, energy. They supply most of the gas to Europe. So they're a recognized power. To say they're not a recognized power or they're just a bunch of evil people is just stupid. I've never been to Russia. I get it. But I suspect that the people in Russia, they just want to eat Russian food, dance to Russian music, and go to soccer games and their own sports, and would rather not have any kind of war. They had a terrible war. I mean, after all, they were on our side in World War II, but they lost millions of people in World War II. Millions. So I'd rather have Trump to be friends with Putin, but I'd rather characterize it not as friendships, like we're just going out and having a beer together, drinking buddies, but respectful of each other's power and respectful that each other means what they say. So if Trump says, I'm going to do this, Putin believes him. Doesn't call us a bluff. He believes him. And if Trump says, and if Putin says to Trump, hey, you've got to make sure that Ukraine is not ever going to be part of NATO. Trump has to believe that's not a bluff. That's what Putin wants. Trump says they have all the cards. Well, sure, they're the one that are fighting the war. All we're doing is supplying weapons, letting somebody else lose hundreds of thousands of lives. I'm not proud of that. I don't see why America should be proud of the fact that as a proxy war, what are we doing? Saving some country for what? I mean, what I mean is not for what, but if we weren't supplying them weapons, the war would have been over. Yeah, you could say, yeah, Russia may have taken over the Ukraine, but who's to say what actually would have happened? But the point is, it doesn't help for us to supply rockets and bullets and weapons and training and all these other things. But you got to watch Rachel Maddow because she will take this concept of a friendship between Putin and Trump and morph it into a conspiracy. They're splitting up the world, maybe leaving a little bit for China. I don't agree with that, but I'm telling you, if you want to learn how to be effective in delivering messages, listen to Rachel Maddow. She's very, very effective. Thank God not many people listen to her. That's all I got for today. It's a Wednesday. There's so many unbelievably great things happening that there's so many things we could talk about in terms of what's going on in the United States. And for those of you who noticed, yesterday I was talking about Boeing never getting back. And of course, today the stock went up $11 a share. So who's to say? Who's to know? Right? I read a book one time that said, don't kid yourself. The stock market is a random walk. That's all I've got for today. Stay tuned, stay listening in. I hope these observations are fun. I don't know if you agree with them or not, but if you don't, send me an email, webtalkwithbob@gmail.com, and say, hey, Bob, where'd you get that wild idea? Where did you get that wild idea? That's all I've got. Listen up. There's a lot of great things happening. It's just a wonderful time to be alive and watch what's going on. Bye, all.